Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hi, everybody. It's Diane. And today we are creating a legacy that lives on after you. That's right. We're going to create a legacy that lives on after you. And I have an amazing guest with us today. Her name is Melissa Mall. And I met her through a friend, through a Facebook Live. It was the most intuitive, amazing kind of interaction. And we became fast friends because we have a lot of the same missions, a lot of the same ideas, and just a great time. So I said, please come on the show, come on Someone Gets Me, and share your gift with all of you. So you might want to get a pen and paper because I have a feeling she's going to say some things that are really going to help you move your life in the best direction ever. So Melissa is a career military woman who has achieved things very few people have done. I'm going to let her tell you that story. And she currently works with veterans. Thus, the beautiful flag behind her that was made by her family for her business. And it's just in her soul to create legacy and serve other people. So Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Diane, for having me.
This is going to be so fun because just in our we had Zoom tea, everybody. I invited Melissa for Zoom tea and we're drinking tea through Zoom since we can't be in person. And we had the most delightful time. And the thing that really impressed me about Melissa was her dedication to service and serving others. So Melissa, will you share a little bit about your story, like where you were raised? How did you get into the military? And a little bit about that career that you told me about. And any story that you think is fascinating, I just really am captivated by your mission and your success.
Wow. Well, thank you for such a wonderful introduction. I will do my best to live up to the hype. Well, it's interesting that you're talking about leaving a legacy because I believe that I am a legacy, a military legacy, which I hope to in turn carry on that tradition. So I was originally born in Washington, D.C., and I grew up on the Maryland side. And if anyone's from the DMV, they understand that. You're either from the Virginia side or you're from the Maryland side. So that's where I grew up, right outside of Andrews Air Force Base. And I grew up with a single mom, my brother and I. And so we spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. So I was the first grandchild. So I am the self-proclaimed favorite of my grandparents. And the good thing about that is that I really grew up with my grandparents. My grandmother was our babysitter, per se, through our whole lives. We were really fortunate to have that opportunity. So my grandfather had spent almost 25 years in the Navy. And then retired, got right out and worked at the same desk, doing the same thing, which was intelligence work for the Navy. All in all, he had a 50-year career in the service. And so when I decided, I went to college at University of Maryland, and I decided that was not exactly for me because I had no clue where I wanted to go. And I thought, what about what Pop did? My grandfather, I called him Pop. And I said, he had a slide machine, like one of those, like a slide, and you'd stick it in the projector and you'd spin it one time and you saw this picture. Well, every so often he would break out the slide. So I got to see his adventures from all around the world of what he did. And he would tell these stories of this camaraderie. And when they would all, you know, get in a fist fight at a port in Italy or something, and then they would all run back on the ship and, you know, all these shenanigans that nobody really got hurt, but it was just, you know, I just thought that's what the military was. And then when I decided that I didn't know what I wanted to do, I decided I wanted to join the military. And he was the first person that I told because I was afraid to tell my mom. I thought she would have a heart attack. And so I went home and I told my pop and I asked him if he would help me tell my mom. And so he did. And I actually started in the Army. I started in the Army first and I spent 2 years in the Army and then I got hurt. And they gave me the option of getting out and I did. But then a few years later, I just really felt this call that the military was what I was supposed to do. So I decided to try to go into the Air Force, into the Air National Guard, and that's what I did. And I will retire at the end of this year with 20 years of service.
Well, congratulations, and thank you so much for all these years of service. It warms my heart. And so tell everybody about the rank you are and how you got there and the percentages like you shared with me. I think that's really a statement of you being a legacy. Yes.
Well, I am currently a Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force, which is an E9, which is the highest enlisted rank that you can be. We've always been told that 0.07 United States population is in the military, 0.7 of 1%. And of that 0.7, only 1% make it to the rank of E9. And of the rank of E9, only 0.3% of the 1% are females. So I'm very proud of my service. I'm really proud that I've stuck it through. No one would have thought that. I was a cheerleader in high school, dancer. And when I came home and told him I was going in the military, everybody thought I was crazy, to include myself a little bit. So I'm really proud that I stuck it through. And we have a very large military family. I have 7 other female cousins who have all served in the military. So that's our legacy.
It definitely is your legacy. And it's neat that you have been creating it all along and you involved your family in it. And there's way more to it than just, I think I'm going to go in the military and it's random. It's clearly part of the legacy. So has there ever been a time where people just didn't get you or people didn't understand you, where you felt like you were different than other people and they would just kind of look at you funny and they didn't they'd be like, huh, what? Has that ever happened to you?
Just about every day. So it's interesting. So I mentioned that I was a dancer. I've danced since I was 5 years old, tap, jazz, ballet, and that kind of stuff. And I was on the teams and dance teams in high school. So I was pretty much what everyone thought, I guess you'd call a girly girl. And when I said, I'm going into the Army, everybody just kind of laughed. Not meanly, but they're like, yeah, okay, whatever you say. So they didn't get me then.
Right.
And then in the military, I think, I'm not sure that I totally fit in the military either. And I say that because I was always very out of the box thinking. I always thought there's another way of doing this. And if any of your viewers or your listeners have ever been in the military or know someone who's been in the military, that's not really how the military works.
No, it's not. That's not how it goes at all.
there's a very distinct chain of command. There are usually checklists for everything. There's a way to do that. They want everything done. And I didn't always, to say that I danced to the beat of my own drum is probably a little bit of an understatement. And don't get me wrong. I got my share of slaps on the wrist for sure. But it was only because I just knew there was a better way to do things. And there was just so many more opportunities out there that we could utilize, mm-hmm. That a lot of the folks in the military just didn't have the exposure to. And so I've tried to balance the two, because even the military folks kind of didn't didn't get me. So, you know, you have to learn how to bring that change. You can't just be the bull in the china shop, because then nobody wants to deal with you. It's some pretty basic lessons in change management of how you get people to kind of come over to your way of thinking. It has a lot to do with leadership, knowing how to introduce new things and new ways of doing things in a way that people will follow you.
And I think that's valuable information right there, because, you know, you learned it in life, just trying to get through all of these things and manage that. And I can see you kind of like you're in the middle between the girly girl dancer person and the military person, because you have this amazing intelligence and strong mind and strong character, and you're feminine and happy and light at the same time. And so it's like, I could, when you're talking, I so could see you just kind of navigating through all of that, but learning how to interact with people and help people see it instead of being that pushy bull in a china shop, or the other way, kind of like the totally withdrawn, reclusive, not bringing, you know, your legacy or gifts forward, could have been the other mistake. So it's neat that you've been able to just find that groove and that road and everything.
Well, not easily. I will tell you, all those things that you just said, I tried. And I've been the bull in the china shop. I've been the, you know, wallflower to not say anything. So much trial by error that, it's been 20 years. I've been in the military for 20 years, and I don't know if I still have it right. There have been many, many, many days that I didn't think anybody got me.
Oh, yes. And sometimes that can feel very kind of disheartening and lonely and things like that. So what would you attribute your ability to keep going and your resilience in this situation? Did you have a mentor or an internal just voice that helps you keep going even when those days would be like, no one's getting this at all and I'm feeling kind of alone, you know? How did you keep going?
I've been through all of those. I've had times that I've had a mentor that has helped me through. I've done so much personal development, training, and education, because I've always been interested in that field. So I've read so many people's works that I've just really taken so many pieces from different people. One of those being, I'm also a master resilience trainer. So there's a program through the university, they developed a program at the University of Pennsylvania that the Air Force uses for resilience. And one of their strategies of how to build resilience is to have a board of directors, what they call a board of directors. Mm-hmm. Now, on that board of directors, you'll have people that your mentors that you want to emulate, but then you also have people on that board that you don't want to emulate. And that was just as important of, you see somebody leading or doing things that is not working, and nobody wants to be around them. Well, he or she can be on your board, but they're on the side of don't do what they do. And so I just, whenever those people came around, whether it was a don't do this or be like this person, I kept putting them on, building my board of directors, so that on the days that I didn't think that I could make it, I just said, okay, what would this person do? What would this person do? So don't do this, but try this. And I think you can have mentors of all kinds, mentors of what to do, mentors of what not to do. And and not to mention education. That's a big thing for me too, is really read as much as you can, learn as much as you can, because the more knowledge that you have, the more you can navigate through those, through different situations that you get put in. And that's just what I've tried to do.
Yes, that's so true. Like, I remember when I was like 16, somehow, I think it was a divine inspiration that I wouldn't have called it that then. And I had this thought that said, learn everything you can. Just keep learning, 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 because you'll never know who you're going to run into. Well, now, many years later, and a 40-year career of doing personal development and business development, I understand almost everything somebody can say because somewhere I've been exposed to it or chosen to learn it or take a class in it, or now I'm interviewing tons of people who've done different things, and I get re-inspired maybe of something I knew or something else puts the puzzle pieces together, but it's only because I've dedicated formal and informal education for my lifetime. And I don't know where that thought came from. I'm assuming it's divine, but I'm really glad I followed it, you know? So, and I'm glad to hear you say that. And the other thing that you just said that I really want to maybe talk about more, definitely bring home for all of us, was the part of the board of directors of what I'm not going to do. You know, like I always say, what am I willing to do and what am I willing to no longer do in order to get where I'm going? And I really love that idea of a board of directors that some of them are the people that don't resonate with you, that you're not going to emulate for whatever reason, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You just know that this over here is not where I'm headed. So we can rule that out right away, which I think makes resilience better, but I also think it makes for better discernment and decision making. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people think the board of directors are only like, you have to follow everything they say and that's the way it's set up, and they're the people that are only going to move you forward. Well, sometimes there's people on the board that help show you the other side of the coin so you can use better discernment and better decision. So I'm really glad you brought that up. I think that's a really key part to being successful and to learning how to navigate an insensitive world. If you're a sensitive person or somebody who sees things differently, we have to learn how to navigate differently than the average bear out mm-hmm. there.
Absolutely. And you need people on that board of directors that are not like you.
Oh, yes.
That's really tough too, that you think, oh, we're all going to think alike and we're all going to get along great. No, 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 no. You need people who are going to challenge you. And even if, you know, you don't tell them they're on your board of directors, of course.
No, of course, you know, not. I mean, it's all in your head.
Exactly. You just have them and you just watch. You just pay attention to what they're doing and you think, okay. And not every person needs to be your end-all, be-all mentor, because you might mentor, someone on your board of directors might be someone that you want to emulate on the personal side. Like, oh, they're very empathetic. They're compassionate. I want to do that. And then you could have somebody else that is very strong business minded, but they're not, they don't have the best bedside manner, but they are smart in business. So you can pull, whatever their strength is, you can pull a little bit from each one. So not every person is the end all be all.
Right. And that's a good point. And as I'm talking and you're doing this, I'm thinking, well, and that's where our own personal legacy is right there, mm-hmm. is in the marrying and the mixing and the putting together of all of those things into our own unique soup, so to speak. And it has mm-hmm. its own flavor, its own thing. And then that's our legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that. I just think that's amazing. I think it's fun. So tell me a little bit about any situation, or let me think about how I want to ask this. Okay. Have you ever struggled with overthinking?
It's so interesting that your show is called Somebody Gets Me, because it feels like you're just in my mind. Yes. Wait, say that again. Ask, let me hear that again, the question.
Okay, so we take a deep breath and I ask you, have you ever struggled with overthinking? Thinking too much about something, almost to the point of maybe where it worked against you or made something more difficult?
Yes, and that is a big lesson that I have learned through some teachings from Jack Canfield, who is also a mentor of mine. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I tend to be a little bit of a perfectionist, if you were to ask those who know me. And so I am always afraid of putting something out there that's not 100%. And that comes from a few different things. It's, I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Or I feel like I want to put my best out there. Or if I don't put my best out there, people are going to think I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm doing. But what I realized was, when I see people who are putting things out there and it's not perfect, the thing is I notice it. right?
So right. That's
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that goes to my mind. Now, I don't criticize them out loud, but in my mind, I mean, I'm just being completely honest. Mm-hmm. You know, I would hope I'm not alone in this, but I think, well, that's not right. Well, that's not whatever. But then I sit back and I say, wait a minute, they're running a business. Like, they have customers. They're out there doing it. Just, they're living their dream, and I'm not, because I'm sitting back here criticizing it. So I have really had to dig down, and I think it's ego. I think a lot of it is ego, because I just don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing. But I tell you what, when you put your heart out there, when you put your best effort, and you have, and people know what your intentions are, and they can see that you're sincere, they are so willing to give you grace that it's mind blowing. And I do that for people when I, okay, so not in my head, but I really do appreciate their effort. And I think, wow, you know, well, yeah, you're doing great. Don't worry about it. But why can't I think of that for me? Why can't I give myself grace? And so I'm not 100% there yet. I still have those moments, even with veteran companions that, you know, that we'll get to. It's not perfect. I was afraid to have people in the office because it's not full of furniture. Their things aren't on the walls. But I started kind of opening up a little bit, and all of a sudden people want to use the office. They're excited about it. They love the wall. Even though, you know, there's no furniture over there. So I just think that people are a lot more, are willing to give grace more than you think. And so I have to remind myself that of every day.
Yes, that's so true. People are willing to give grace. And I'm laughing because the perfectionism part, that was going to be the next question about it. Well, because visionaries and gifted people, which is who most of the audience is for the show, we struggle with overthinking and procrastination and perfectionism in ourselves. And, you know, like, we can look at something we produced and be much harsher on it than the other people. Mm-hmm. And I know I have to work through that too. A lot of the times, like, I'll say something, oh, my hair wasn't right. And somebody goes, what are you talking about? Like, they don't see it, but I see every little thing. Mm-hmm. And part of the seeing every little thing is a superpower that we have, because we can discern things much easier than a lot of things. And it can work against us if we turn it into that judgment that you talked about. And absolutely. Criticism, you know, so that's another really good point that you bring up, because I think it's a very important thing as we create our legacies and go down life, and we're navigating how we can take all of our eccentricities and gifts and uniqueness and have them come together in something that really has meaning. And so I want to talk a little bit now about veteran companions and how you came up with the vision and what you would like to share about it. And how that fits into the overall legacy.
So I am so glad that you asked me about veteran companions, and especially because of the topic of your show today, because this truly is a legacy. Because I know, you know, earlier I talked about my grandfather, who obviously is extremely important to me. And a few years ago, we were planning, you know, I retire at the end of this year. So we were kind of, my husband and I were thinking, okay, what are we going to do next for the next chapter of our lives? And I always wanted to own my own business. I just didn't know what it was that I wanted to do. And I started doing some research, and we thought of my grandfather was diagnosed with dementia about 5 years ago. Now, it wasn't a surprise, because all of his five brothers and his mother all passed away. And so the diagnosis wasn't a surprise, but what was a surprise was how difficult it was to try to find care for him and help for my grandmother. And so when I started doing some research and helping my mom, trying to find some home care places, to see if we could get some help for my grandfather. It was a nightmare, to be honest. And I read this story when I was reading the reviews of different companies. I read a story but a company who sent an 18-year-old girl in to be a caregiver who for a gentleman who happened to be a veteran. And her very first day on the job, she went through his entire house, through his closets, excuse me, through everything. Well, she found his old uniforms. She called her boyfriend and had him come over to this gentleman's house, and they stole the medals off of his uniform and took him to the pawn shop because they thought they could get money for him. So I'm reading this story. I have tears running down my face thinking this could be my grandfather. Mm-hmm. This could be someone in my grandparents' home who you trust to come in to take care of them. So as I started doing more research, this was not an isolated incident. I even have a friend of mine who hired a caregiver through an agency to go and take care of her dad. And he stole her mother's jewelry while he was there over a year and working with the family for a year. And the whole time he was stealing her jewelry. Mm. And then what happens is these people who do this, they hop from agency to agency. So before, even if they get caught, it takes them a year or two to have to go to court, and they're already working for another agency. And I just decided right then and there, I said, this is what I'm going to do, and because this isn't going to happen on my watch, as best as I can. Mm-hmm. And so over the last couple of years, we've been developing the way that we wanted to run a home care agency. And so last year, I left active duty, and we started Veteran Companions. And what we do is I hire veterans and military spouses, military or any military dependent as our caregivers. But we don't call them caregivers, we call them battle buddies, because that's who you have. That's what we call each other in the military. We're each other's battle buddies because we always have each other's backs. Mm-hmm. So that's what I wanted to call our caregivers. Where your battle buddy. And so we're so proud that we're hiring, we're helping against, the military spouse unemployment rate is 25%.
Wow.
So people talk about hiring veterans, and that's great, but that they're already out of the service. So they don't mind making an investment in them because they know they'll be there. But the military spouses, they don't hire as much because they know in a few years they're going to be gone. So nobody likes to talk about the military spouse unemployment rate. So what we're doing is these skills that I can teach them here because I train them. They don't have to have any medical experience. I train them, and then they can take that to wherever they go onto their next duty station. And then so we help senior citizens, of course, with home care. We also help wounded warriors who need help around the house. We'll help anybody. You don't have to be a veteran, but veterans are just kind of our focus. Mm-hmm. And even if you've had surgery and you live alone and you might need help for a week or two afterwards, that we do that as well. And we can also help with adults over the age of 18 with disabilities as well. So we can help with companion care for them. We do handyman services, AKA my husband goes out and does handyman services for anybody who needs it. We do pet services. You know, seniors, I love it when senior citizens especially, or even wounded warriors have their guide dogs or their just pets, right, for the companionship. And, but they can't take them to the vet. Because that's a big ordeal for the pet and the person. So we do that for them as well.
Oh, that's amazing, because with Home for Patriots that I'm involved in, we're training for service dogs for first responders, which includes veterans and also all first responders. And so I've often think about that, like, okay, so we train the service dogs and the people, and that's all great. But I've also worked in mental health populations and other populations where people have the dog for companionship. And then, like you said, going to the vet or some of the other just daily things that you don't really realize are coming down the pike that we just take for granted. I just take when it's time to take my dog to the vet, I put her in the car and we go. And we don't realize sometimes that extra support that especially a veteran could use is so valuable. So your service is not only much needed, but it's valuable in multiple ways to lots of different people. And, you know, and I didn't know that the military spouse unemployment rate was that high. Mm-hmm. It makes perfect sense. And what a great way to help train people. And then they can feel like they're of service and they're useful and they're just not like tagging along around the world or whatever, you know, that they get to have a purpose and meaning too. That's wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, you know, part of the vision, part of the bigger vision of Veteran Companions is that once we build this model and are successful here, that I want to franchise it to other veterans so that they can go and own the same type of business in other locations. I have people from all over the country messaging me, asking me if we have an office in their city. And, you know, it just kills me to say, no, not yet. Veterans are fantastic entrepreneurs. And so if I can build this model and then have veterans, I will teach other veterans how to run this business and they can go and they can do this in their communities as well. That's the vision.
Well, that's great. And then it's serving more people, and that's how Home for Patriots mm-hmm. is going to operate too, of taking it out across the country, because it's so important that we step up and create a legacy that is far larger than us, that ripples out longer down generations, that really authentically serves people in an aligned way, like mm-hmm. you're doing. Like, it's clear that your heart is, that it's from your heart in your alignment. It's just not, oh, I had a good idea, only in your head. I can feel it from you. And so yeah. Thank you for creating this amazing company and doing all this great work. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. That's very heartwarming to hear. And we hope that we're doing the right thing. You know, what I didn't mention was we were just getting ready to roll out this brand new program called Roll Call. So if you're in the military, you were in the military, you remember having to get up every morning and go into formation for Roll Call. And so that's what we decided to call our program. But it's a phone call system. So right now, because of the COVID-19 virus going on, it's so great to see that people are checking up on those people who need to be checked up on. Mm-hmm. We do this on a regular, this is what we do actually. So in hiring, as I mentioned, we hire the military spouses. For Roll Call, we actually hire those veterans such as that might have PTSD that can't leave their homes, but they can certainly talk on the phone. So what we do is we offer this service that someone can call you if you live alone or your loved one on a scheduled basis, whatever you want, once a week, twice a week, three times a month, whatever, every day of the month, and we call and check on you. And if you don't answer, we're going to call you back in 15 minutes. And if you don't answer then, we're going to call you back in another 15 minutes. And after an hour of not getting you, we go down your list of who you want us to call to come and check on you. So the idea is not only are we checking on you, we're letting you know that someone cares about you, we're seeing if you need anything, but we're also hoping that we're helping the police department and the fire department decrease the number of wellness checks that they go out and they have to do. So if we kind of have our goal is to partner with the police departments and fire stations so that we work together where we're calling and talking to these to the folks who might need us before we have to call the police or the fire department to go and do a wellness check. So that's our new program that we're getting ready to launch called Roll Call that is very, very important to me because there are lots of folks out there who suffer from, they can't leave the house. For PTSD and different things. I know you've worked with these folks, Diane, but they're totally capable. They are totally. So capable and want to, I mean, imagine having another veteran call you on the phone.
Right.
And so that's what we're trying to marry the two together to bring the whole community together.
I love that. I have tears in my eyes. I love that. I think I think the ripple effect of value for that is far greater than we can even see yet. I really believe that. That's a great roll call. I love that. I love the names that you that you create for things. It's like, yes, of course. That's what that's of course that's the name. Like, duh, right? So I have another question. It's kind of personal, but it's kind of fun. Oh. And because I know you've traveled all over. And I would love to hear about what is the most memorable food that you've ever eaten.
Oh, the most memorable food. Oh, there would probably be a couple. So, an interesting experiences. So again, if you know me, I'm not the most adventurous eater. So I have my regular go-tos. Mm-hmm. I'm not super picky, but I might be on the pickier side compared to a lot of people. So if you can imagine going to different countries, I was very worried. It was, you know, it's a little bit of anxiety on my mind of what am I going to eat? so, you know, I can think of one place when I was in Qatar. I spent some time in Qatar. I've been to Iraq. I've been to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And to be honest with you, I can't even tell you what the food was because I have no idea what it was. But it did not go well. but I mean, you know, completely honest, I don't even know what it was. But here's what I'm proud of. I did taste it all. At least I did put forth the effort to taste mm-hmm. it all. So that was good. I can tell you, I hope I can tell this story. It's not too bad. But I was in Iraq, and we were out in Baghdad and driving around. And the guys that I was with wanted to get some chickens for dinner. And I said, what do you mean chicken for dinner? We don't have anywhere to cook that. And we were rationing water, water to drink in MREs. And I said, oh no, we'll cook them up. So we bought live chickens and we took them up on the rooftop of a place and they had a big bag of rice. So I didn't watch them do it, but they prepared the chickens and they just cooked it in a big pot over a flame with some rice. But I tell you what, of not having hot food for a very long time, it was the best chicken and rice that I ever had.
Wow. Right. You would think, chicken and rice is nothing. But when you put perspective on it and context to it, it's a completely different meal.
That's right.
Wow. That's amazing. So, of all the places that you've traveled, does a place stand out that has actually transformed you or changed you profoundly?
I can think of two different things. So two different places. One was when I was deployed to Iraq. Yeah. And as I mentioned, we were rationing water, which was frightening. When I sat down to think about it, like, oh, I can't just have, you know, however many bottles of water. We were rationed the water. And that was, it was just mind blowing to me when I really thought, and I don't know if everyone feels this way who have been deployed, but which is why you don't get very much time off, by the way. When you're deployed, you are working. If you're lucky, you might get one day off. But you're working 12, 14, 16 hours a day, and all you get to do is work and sleep. And they do that on purpose because when you have a few minutes to sit down in the quiet and you realize where you are and you feel like if you picture the globe in your mind and here's your family and you're over here, and it really makes you think, how am I ever going to get back to them? It's a very scary, sobering realization that I had never, experienced before until I went to Iraq, and you're sitting in a war zone, of how little you feel in the world. and where you are, because you've never seen an environment like this, the desert. And but then you go and there's just plush areas where, you know, there's the Euphrates and the Tigris River, and you think of where you are in history of what has happened there before, and you're standing in the same steps, in the same same spot. And so it was frightening, but enlightening, and just gratitude, and I don't know, it was every emotion rolled up into one. And then the other place I would say would be Seoul, Korea. I spent a year there, and they are the most kindest, hospitable people I have ever met on the planet. The South Koreans, they, you know, there was no crime over there. There were no guns. Nobody in South Korea has a gun. If you did something nice, we kind of adopted a family, or they kind of adopted us. And if we did one nice thing for them, within a couple of hours, they had brought us a whole dish of homemade food. Like we couldn't get one up on them. Like we're like, no, we just want to do something nice for you. And then they would come back with something even nicer. And then, you know, it was like this, it was a competition of niceness. So it was just to learn, just to see another culture that is so opposite. I mean, obviously I didn't blend very well over in South Korea. But to be so different. And then when you see how much we are the same, and how just nice of a complete culture of people they are, was amazing. And I'll never forget it.
Wow. Those are great stories. Thank you so much. And I think that I'm listening to you and I'm getting goosebumps because of the depth of all the experience. And of course we could talk on and on, not only for your education and training and all of the things you're certified in and can do and have created, but this great legacy with Veteran Companions. It just goes on and on and on. It's magnificent to me. So if you're listening to Melissa and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have to know more about her, we're going to put all of her contact information in the show notes for you, and you will be able to reach her and follow her. I've already started following all the neat things she's doing, and it's magical to watch a legacy unfold from somebody who's so aligned with a pure heart. So thank you for what you've done for our country. Thank you what you're doing for our veterans. And just thank you for following the calling instead of ignoring it. I just thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you so much.
So I have one last question that I typically ask. That's kind of a fun question. And then we will end the show. And the last question is, if you could put any message you want on a billboard that the whole world would see, what would that billboard say?
Okay, I say this all the time. Two things. I want to put two things on the billboard. Number one, I say make it happen. That's my thing. Make it happen. If that's what you want, if that is on your mind, in your heart, if it's in every fight, whatever it is, make it happen. Mm-hmm. And my second one would be, you know how Gandhi said, be the change.
Yes.
I always tell people, allow the change. Mm-hmm. That's my other mantra. One is make it happen. And the other one is allow the change. Because we tell people to do this, be creative, be whatever. But are you the boss at the first time somebody comes to you and says, oh, I have this great idea? You say, oh, we can't really we don't have time to deal with that right now. If people are being the change, you've got to allow it.
Yes.
So allow the change.
Make it happen and allow the change. So we're going to have one of those electronic billboards for you that just switches the messages. Yeah, that'll be really fun, and it'll light up and everything. So that is a great message for all of us. And so thank you, Melissa, for being on Someone Gets Me today and sharing your vision and your legacy. And I'm so excited to see how things move forward for your business and for your life and everything that you're doing in the world. And again, thank you for your service, and thank you for being on the show.
Well, thanks for getting me, Diane.
Thank you. Well, remember, everybody, to keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you, because you're a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So now go out there and allow the change and let yourself stand out to be a beautiful voice, just like Melissa's doing. So contact her and let her know that you heard her on this show. And until the next time, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.